It is written that in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. The waves moved with a mighty, majestic rhythm in accord with the heartbeat of the universe. And with that sound was born the first symphony. Humankind, too, heard the music, the cadence, and in times of celebration would join hands and move with it. With that prehistoric ballet was born the first ring dance, the ancestor of the sacred carol. The sacred carol as ring dance is thousands of years old. But it was not until the Middle Ages that this spontaneous, unchoreographed dance took on the definition and character that we have come to call the carol. Carols as ring dances did not historically contain the theme of the Nativity, the birth of Christ. In fact, many were pagan, a point that would cause grumbling within the churches as time went on. The form of caroling that we know today is due primarily to St. Francis of Assisi, who first introduced ring dancing and singing around the manger scene in Italy in 1223. It was his way of involving the common people in church rituals, celebrating the birth of Christ. The carols were incorporated into mystery plays, dramatized biblical stories, which became so popular that eventually the actors were not only leading the audience in singing, but shepherding them into the streets for a musical procession. Many of today's carols still retain their original dance-like flavor, even if somewhat modified. Take, for example, one of the oldest carols, God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, performed here by guitarist James Sundquist. God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, or God Keep You Merry Gentlemen, is one of the most ancient and pure carols in Christendom, dating back to England in the 10th century. The tune we have come to associate with the carol was originally bouncier and more danceable. Dance, however, was considered by some a heathen practice, and it was even outlawed at one point. Yet this carol was so popular, the church eventually modified the rhythm and included it in their services. Thank you. The tussle over dancing and carols was not confined to the Church of England. The Catholic Church, too, objected to carols, primarily because the traditional tunes often had many different texts, and a good deal of them were totally non-religious. The thought of people singing pagan songs in a church service was quite unacceptable. The church hierarchy also felt the boisterous nature of the ring dance was not suitable for religious services and might diminish the stature of the priests and bishops who led the congregation. Not all of what we today call carols arose from dance origins, however. Some developed strictly from church tradition, the singing of hymns. Such is the case with one of the best known carols, Angels We Have Heard on High. Les Anges nos dons compagnes, Angels We Have Heard on High, is one of the earliest solely Christmas hymns of the Christian Church in France. Coming from an ecclesiastical rather than dance background, the hymn does not technically qualify as a sacred carol. The dance heritage of carols has almost completely disappeared over the centuries, however, and now little distinction is made between Christmas hymns and sacred carols. Angels We Have Heard on High has a traditional French melody, but the text is macaronic. The verses were written in 18th century secular French, while the refrain is in Latin, presumably taken from a late medieval Latin chorale. It is one of the few carols still traditionally sung in two languages. If Angels We Have Heard on High is an example of a pure Christmas hymn, then another French song, The First Noel, is an equally pure example of the traditional sacred carol. It was indeed meant to be danced to, and conforms to customary stanza burden format, where the dancers are still throughout the verses, then sing and dance during the chorus. In the case of The First Noel, the stanzas are supposedly sung by the shepherds, and the refrain by the angels. The text is thought to have originated in the 13th century and may have been brought to England from France during the Norman conquest. It was first published as a poem in Gilbert Davies' Some Ancient Christmas Carols in 1823. The simple and moving melody is a traditional English West Country folk tune and may have originated as a descant to another carol melody. Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare him room, and heaven and nature sing. Joy to the earth, the Savior reigns. Let men their songs employ, while fields and floods, rocks, hills, and plains repeat the sounding joy. No more let sins and sorrows grow, nor thorns infest the ground. He comes to make his blessings flow far as the curse is found. He rules the world with truth and grace, and makes the nations prove the glories of his righteousness and wonders of his love. The text to this famous English carol was written by the prolific Isaac Watts in 1719. Watts, a Calvinist, is regarded as the man who liberated the Church of England from singing only psalms. He did this by adapting psalms into New Testament language, saying he wished to make the biblical David speak like a Christian. Such is the case with Joy to the World, a modification of Psalm 98. In all, Isaac Watts wrote texts for more than 400 hymns, an output eclipsed only by Charles Wesley and Fanny Crosby. Yet Watts had nothing to do with the music used for his hymns. The church clerk would lead the congregation, normally using one of the same few melodies which the Church of England was already using for all 150 psalms. Sometimes secular metrical ballads were used as well. Most of the music we now associate with the hymns of Isaac Watts was composed after his death. The initial melody set to Joy to the World is now long extinct. The celebrated version we sing today was written in 1838 by Lowell Mason, an American composer, publisher, and music educator. Mason arranged the melody, but attributed the tune to Frederick Handel, of whom he was a great admirer. Mason adapted the music from two separate melodic phrases of Handel's Messiah. While Isaac Watts wrote all the texts of his hymns in vernacular English, other British composers of the period, particularly those of the Catholic Church, were writing in classical Latin. This sometimes caused confusion as to the true authorship of a particular carol. Such is the case with John Francis Wade. In the early 1700s, the young Englishman was a copyist and music teacher at the renowned Roman Catholic Center in Douai, France. He wrote a Christmas carol with the Latin text, to be used as a processional hymn. It became very popular and was used by various religious groups during processionals at midnight mass. Despite its widespread use, or perhaps because of it, John Wade's connection to the tune seems to have gotten lost. In 1751, a copy of the carol was made for the English Roman Catholic College in Lisbon, where it became known as the Portuguese hymn. As late as 1900, it was still widely believed that the original Latin was the work of St. Bonaventura, and that the tune was written either by a Portuguese monk or by an English musician named John Redding. Recent evidence, however, seems to show beyond doubt that the words and music were indeed composed by John Wade. His majestic carol has now been translated into more than 130 languages and dialects, and is sung all over the world. We know it as Adeste Fidelis, O Come, All Ye Faithful.
Thank you.
Not all our popular Christmas carols come from an English or French background, though at times it may seem so. The Germanic countries contributed a great deal both to the music and other traditions we today associate with Christmas. Germany gave us the Christmas tree, and Austria gave us one of the most enduring sacred carols of all times, Silent Night. The village of Oberndorf nestles quietly on the banks of the Zalzach River, just 10 miles north of Salzburg. The story of Silent Night begins there on the night before Christmas Eve, 1818, when the organ broke down in the Church of St. Nicholas. This was a major crisis for the church and upset all of the plans for the next day's Christmas Eve service. Upon hearing the news, the priest of the church, Josef Mühr, went home that night and wrote this poem. Stille Nacht, heilige Nacht, alles schläft. Einsam wacht nur das traute, hochheilige Paar. Holde Knabe in lockigem Haar, schlaf in himmlischer Ruh, schlaf in himmlischer Ruh. The next morning, Josef Mühr handed the poem to his friend Franz Gruber, who was the acting organist at St. Nicholas and a schoolteacher by profession. Mühr hoped that his friend could set the poem to music on an instrument other than the organ. By the end of the day, Gruber had composed and arranged Mühr's text for two voices and guitar, which he transcribed for that night's Christmas Eve service. Silent Night has become the only famous Christmas carol written for and first performed on the guitar. The story of Silent Night might have ended with that one performance if it were not for the organ repairman who visited the village of Oberndorf. Working in St. Nicholas, he came upon the song quite by accident and took it with him to his home in Zillertal. There he gave the song to a band of touring Tyrolean singers who included it in their program and brought it with them to America, where it became immensely popular. Only later did Silent Night work its way back to the towns and villages of Austria. Where most carols started in the streets and were later absorbed into the church, Silent Night started in the church, but ended up being sung in the streets, a truly international favorite. music you have been listening to is performed by James Sundquist, guitarist, from his album, An Anthology of Sacred Carols for Classical Guitar, available on Eagle Records Masterworks, Records and Tapes. Hail, the heaven-born Prince of Peace. Hail, the Son of Righteousness. Light and life to all he brings, risen with healing in his wings. Mild he lays his glory by, born that man no more may die. Born to raise the songs of earth, born to give them second birth. Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn king. That text, for one of our more celebrated carols, was written as a Christmas hymn by Charles Wesley, the brother of John Wesley, founder of the Methodist Church. Charles Wesley wrote over 6,500 hymns, a staggering number, that includes such well-known compositions as Christ the Lord is Risen Today and Jesus, Lover of My Soul. Yet, like Isaac Watts, Wesley did not compose the tunes for his hymns. Both Watts and Wesley normally completed their texts as self-contained works, independent of melodic influence. The stirring music, which was later set to Hark the Herald Angels Sing, was not written until more than 100 years after Wesley composed the text in 1739. For more than a century, the words were sung to another melody which is no longer extant. In the mid-19th century, W.H. Cummings, the organist at Waltham Abbey in England, adapted Wesley's text to a new melody by the gifted German composer Felix Mendelssohn. Mendelssohn, known for his Songs Without Words, had written that particular melody as part of a secular cantata to commemorate the installation of the Gutenberg printing press in Leipzig, Germany. Cummings adapted the music to Wesley's text 8 years after Mendelssohn's death.
Thank you.
Cantique de Noël, O Holy Night, differs in many respects from either pure sacred carols or traditional Christmas hymns. Normally, carol lyrics are written first, then either attached to already existing music, or have music commissioned specifically for the text. But in the case of O Holy Night, the music came first. The composer was Adolphe Charles Adam, a Frenchman primarily known for his 53 operettas and 5 ballets. Around 1830, he composed a piece of music he called Christmas Song and asked Marie Capot de Roquemaure to write for it a sacred text based on the Nativity theme. It was unusual enough for Adam, a Jewish composer, to write a piece of Christmas music, but it was even more unusual to commission a layperson, and a woman at that, to write sacred words. Yet when the carol was finished, it was the music that drew the criticism, not the lyrics. Clerics in France denounced the song for its lack of musical taste and total absence of religious spirit. It was certainly romantically melodic in a way that Gregorian chant or plain song, the accepted kinds of modal music, were not. And although it does not have a ring dance origin, it has a definite waltz-like lilt to it. Nonetheless, the carol, under the title Minuit Chrétien, or Midnight Christian, became quite popular in France, at least up to the time of the Nazi occupation in World War II. Then, because of the composer's Jewish background, the carol was banned, but it was not forgotten. In fact, a line from the original French lyric, "People on your knees await your deliverance," became a rallying cry for the French resistance. The carol not only survived, it flourished, and is today regarded as one of the great sacred Christmas classics.
Thank you.
This English air is probably over 1,000 years old, making it one of the most ancient of carols. In the 16th century, lyrics were added, and it became known as the love ballad Greensleeves. It wasn't until 1865 when William Chatterton Dix adapted a sacred poem of his into a text for the tune that it became a true sacred carol. Dix's poem was called The Manger Throne, but he entitled the carol, What Child Is This? In 1865, the same year that William Dix wrote the text for What Child Is This, a young American preacher was getting the germ of an idea for a new sacred carol. His name was Phillips Brooks, and he was on a tour of the Holy Land, then still part of the Ottoman Empire. He visited Bethlehem, attended a service at the basilica built on the site of the Nativity, and walked over the ground Christ had walked nearly 2,000 years earlier. In his diary, Brooks wrote, "We rode out of town to the field where they say the shepherd saw the star. It is a fenced piece of ground with a cave in it. Somewhere in those fields we rode through, the shepherds must have been. As we passed, they were still keeping watch over their flocks or leading them home to fold." Brooks was deeply moved, but it was not until 3 years later, back at the Holy Trinity Episcopal Church in Philadelphia, that he turned his experiences into a poem intended for his children's Sunday school. O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. Above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. Yet in the dark streets shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. Brooks then asked Lewis Redner, the church organist, to set the text to music for the children's choir. The simple and moving melody Redner composed was to help O Little Town of Bethlehem become one of the last internationally known sacred Christmas carols. social commentary is something one would not normally expect to find in a sacred carol celebrating the birth of Christ. And if one examines the texts, that is found to be, for the most part, true. Yet there are the occasional exceptions. For example, in 1850, these final three verses to a newly written carol caused, if not an uproar, at least considerable consternation. Yet with the woes of sin and strife the world has suffered long. Beneath the angel strain have rolled 2,000 years of wrong. And man at war with man hears not the love song which they bring. Oh, hush the noise, ye men of strife, and hear the angels sing. And ye beneath life's crushing load, whose forms are bending low, who toil along the climbing way with painful steps and slow. Look now, for glad and golden hours come swiftly on the wing. O rest beside the weary road and hear the angels sing. For lo, the days are hastening on by prophets seen of old, when with the ever-circling years shall come the age of gold. When the new heaven and earth shall own the Prince of Peace their king, and the whole world send back the song which now the angels sing. The text in question was written by Edmund Hamilton Sears, an American. The carol is known as It Came Upon a Midnight Clear. In 1849, Hamilton Sears was deeply disturbed by the death and horror of the just-ended Mexican War, and by the greed and calumny that earmarked the beginnings of the Industrial Revolution. In his carol, Sears attempted to use the theme of peace and hope to make veiled reference to those conditions. It was not veiled enough. Considered too controversial, the third stanza was omitted from many hymnals for years, even as the carol grew in fame. One of the sweetest of sacred carols, Away in a Manger, has a somewhat distorted history. It had been said that Martin Luther himself wrote both the text and the melody. Luther had indeed composed many hymns, both the text and the music, which was quite unusual for the era. He loved carols and was certainly known to have sung them in the streets of Eisenach, now part of East Germany. This wonderful little carol, in fact, has in some quarters become known as Luther's cradle song. But there is no evidence that Luther wrote this text. The actual source remains a mystery. Away in a Manger was first printed in Philadelphia in 1885 by James R. Murray, who is believed to have composed the first tune to the text. Strictly speaking, Away in a Manger is not a carol. It is not even a Christmas hymn, but rather a lullaby. Our final presentation is a solely American carol that originated in the hills of Appalachia. It is called I Wonder as I Wander. The tune was unearthed by John Jacob Niles, the great American folklorist, collector, and performer, in July of 1933. He was in the small town of Murphy, North Carolina, attending a meeting of itinerant evangelists, when he first heard the song performed by the young daughter of the revivalist preacher. Seeking the girl out, Niles paid her 25 cents a performance to repeat the four verses while he scribbled down notes. Niles wrote, "After eight tries, I had only three lines of verse, a garbled fragment of melodic material, and a magnificent idea. I Wonder as I Wander is quite unlike all other sacred carols. It completely lacks the rigid meter of most Christmas hymns, and because of its melancholy pensiveness, the tune does not fit the positive feeling of celebration inherent in most other carols. Yet when the song was published in 1934, it struck a responsive enough chord to become a convincing and compelling sacred carol." As innocent and innocuous as sacred carols may sometimes seem, controversy has never lurked very far behind them. In the early days, the Catholic Church actively discouraged dancing during services and the singing of carols of non-religious origin. Yet, they survived. At the end of the Middle Ages in England, caroling had become so offensive that the government at one point outlawed carols with an act of Parliament. Yet they survived. Even today, there are court battles in the United States trying to determine whether sacred carols can be taught and sung in public schools without violating the statutes regarding separation of church and state. In a sense, carols have gone from being not sacred enough to being too sacred. Yet, they survive and flourish. The best sacred carols are a noble conjoining of music, text, and true spiritual celebration. As such, they are eternal. Anthology of the Sacred Christmas Carol, A History, was performed and produced by James Sundquist. Script by Robert Molesky. Your narrator has been Robert Monteagle. The music heard on this program is from the album An Anthology of Sacred Carols for Classical Guitar, available on Eagle Records Masterworks, records and tapes.
Support for the national distribution of this program is provided by National Public Radio member stations and the NPR Arts and Performance Fund. Contributors to this fund include the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and RKO General, a radio and television broadcasting company. This is NPR, National Public Radio.